Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Locked On Islanders podcast. Gil Martin, glad to be with you as I am every Monday as we talk about the biggest stories from around the National Hockey League. We've got three great experts here to talk about some of those stories. First of all, we are joined by J.D. Young of Locked On Sharks to talk about the Sharks releasing Evander Kane, and now Kane saying that he will have a grievance filed on his behalf by the NHL Players Association. Then Sarah Avampato of Locked On LA Kings stops by. Mark Bergevin, now hired as a special assistant or advisor to Rob Blake, the general manager of the Kings. And Sarah has the latest on that. And then Armando Velez of Locked On Florida Panthers joins us to talk about that team, now one of the hottest in the league, and they came away with a big win over the Carolina Hurricanes over the weekend. We've got the latest from those experts with all the biggest stories from around the NHL on this episode of the Locked On NHL podcast. All right, welcome to the Monday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast. Gil Martin, glad to be with you as always on Mondays. And thank you for making Locked On NHL your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. The Evander Kane saga hopefully ending for the San Jose Sharks. J.D. Young of Locked On Sharks joins us. And J.D., how was the weekend?
Very, very interesting weekend. So I assume we're here to talk more about Martin Jones play in Philadelphia than Evander Kane, right? Is
that well, we'll do both. We will definitely do both. Let's start with the Evander Kane thing. Let's get that out of the way. The Sharks letting him go, putting him on waivers, giving him the unconditional release. And Kane and his agent and the Players Association not too thrilled with that. Why don't you fill us in on the latest, where the Sharks stand, and what you expect to happen next?
Yeah, so Kane was placed on waivers on Saturday and cleared Sunday morning. The Athletic is reporting that Kane traveled to or from Vancouver while having a positive COVID test, which is kind of a breach of a contract. So right before Christmas, the San Jose Barracuda, the Sharks minor team, got a rash of COVID, Evander Kane, Ryan Merkley, the list goes on and on. So, but apparently he traveled while positive for COVID. And that is, I guess, what the Sharks are going to use to try to get out of his contract as a breach of contract. So as of right now, Evander Kane is no longer on the San Jose Sharks team. His cap hit is off the books. So they're basically saving about $22 million over the next 3 years. The rest of this season and then the following 3 years. And I mean, honestly, Doug Wilson kind of dodged a bullet here with Evander Kane, where there was talk of, if they wanted to trade him, they're probably going to have to potentially add, a first round pick or an eat salary, or if they want to buy him out, they're going to have to, buy him out this off season. And that's 6 years of him being on the cap books, especially after getting rid of Martin Jones last year. So yeah, I mean, the Sharks are in a better spot this right now than they were coming into the situation on Friday.
What does this mean for the locker room? I know a number of his teammates didn't want anything to do with Evander Kane. The fact that he's no longer a part of the organization, does that benefit certain players in the locker room at all?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of saw it, going into the season where most of the guys just didn't want to talk to him. They said they hadn't even talked, even contacted him and stuff like that, especially before when he got his suspension. That's pretty telling, right? If not one of the guys kind of stands up for you, that's a pretty telling situation. And then, there was rumors of Tomas Hertl, who's probably one of the nicest guys in the NHL. He was really, really upset with Kane's, kind of antics and stuff like that. Basically what came to management, reportedly came to management in the offseason and was like, you got to get rid of him. And then he goes out and scores a natty hattie on Saturday after to win the game against the Flyers. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're related, but yeah.
It's just an amazing coincidence.
Just an amazing coincidence, yes.
Now, that game-winning goal in overtime coming against an old friend, Martin Jones, who spent just a little bit of time as the goalie in San Jose. How did that feel? And Jones played pretty well. He made a lot of saves in that game.
Yeah, it was it was kind of a funny game where, because Aiden Hill has been kind of up and down this season, and Martin Jones, you know, the past three seasons with the Sharks, he had an .896 save percentage like each season. So at least if anything, he was consistent. But you know, after two periods, the game was a 0-0 tie, and you know, it was very much a goalie duel. But the offense kind of broke out, and you know, especially with the Sharks right now, who are down several key players due to injury and COVID. Captain Luca Torres out with COVID. Eric Carlson and Jacob Middleton are both injured right now. Nick Bonino was put on the COVID list right before the game on Saturday. So it was basically Hurdle and Meyer and Brent Burns doing a lot of heavy lifting in that game. And, you know, that was enough for to pull out a win against the Flyers team, which has also kind of been facing their own COVID and injury issues as well.
Yeah, I mean, is there any team right now in the league that hasn't or isn't? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, so, it's been really bad with the COVID issues. So, yeah, it's just the teams right now keep trying to scrap these wins together. So,
you know, the Sharks right in the middle of the hunt for a playoff spot right now in the Pacific Division, Western Conference. They're tied with the Kings, but the Kings have a game in hand. They're 1 point behind Calgary, 4 points behind Anaheim. You're approaching, we're getting close to the halfway mark of the season. Give me an assessment of this team through the first half.
Your guess is as good as mine, because some nights they can just look absolutely terrible, like we saw against the Red Wings, where it was just, you know, just horrible execution. And then even like the first half against the Penguins, where, you know, they give up 4 goals in the first 6 minutes. But then this team does have some resiliency to them. You know, in that Penguins game, they came back and they made it a 6-5 game before the Penguins kind of pulled away with that game. But, you know, it feels like if the stars like Tomas Hertl and Meyer and Carlson, if those guys aren't contributing, if it feels like the depth just isn't there for them to be able to kind of compete in night in and night out. And we've seen when they play some of these good teams where they just don't have the horses for those teams. And their schedule at the end of January, beginning of February, is brutal with a road trip to Florida, games against like the Panthers and the Lightning, and I think they play the Hurricanes in there. And so they've been able to hang in there now, but I'm a little worried that this road trip might be the nail in the coffin for the Sharks season.
So if you're Doug Wilson, what are you looking to do with the trade deadline?
That's going to be the $1 million question, right? Because Tomas Hertl, I think many teams would like to add a 20 goal scorer right now. Basically the best 2C in the league to anybody's team, or, you know, and Hurdle's coming into a contract year. And I mean, the Sharks before this Kane saga, they were going to have money was going to be really tight to try to pay for him. But with the extra $7 million that's been freed up from Evander Kane, you could easily just give that to Tomas Hertl if you want to keep him. I mean, he's still young enough. I think he's a 27 or 28, but he does have an injury history with, you know, multiple knee injuries. So it's going to be a bit of a risk, you know, but if the Sharks wanted to kind of start the reboot in earnest, you could get a nice haul from Tomas Hertl and, you know, kind of help find someone to pair with Eklund and kind of restart your new core.
Is that what you think they should do, or?
It depends on which day you ask me. Some days I'm like, you know what, tear this thing down. It's ready to reboot. But then you see like Tomas Hertl, you know, it's hard to imagine Tomas Hertl not wearing a teal jersey. And, you know, so it's going to be really interesting. I don't envy Doug Wilson going into the next couple weeks here with the trade deadline coming, you know. But if I had to guess right now, I think the Evander Kane contract being moved makes the path easier to retain Hertl. And, you know, and we've heard so much about, you know, Doug Wilson believes the bones are there. And Tomas Hertl is a really, really big, important part of that core. And I think with Kane's contract coming off the books, I think it makes it just a lot easier to re-sign Hertl. And then you add Eklund next season. You've got some guys from your 2020 draft class that are going to start to enter the league here soon. So, yeah, I think with you're not going to be able to get rid of like the Vlasic or Burns contract. I think you're going to probably just try to ride it out right now and see what you can do.
JD, why don't you tell our listeners and our viewers where they could find your show and where they could find you on social media?
Of course, you can find Locked On Sharks wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube. We just hit 500 subscribers on YouTube, and we're on the march to 1,000. I made a dumb video on Twitter where you can find me on my fry hole celebrating our 500th subscriber on YouTube, where I recreated the jumbo slide after he Joe Thornton won an overtime playoff game against the LA Kings. My dog is easily the best part of the video, so please go enjoy that.
Awesome. You always have creative stuff up there.
Also, I'm at my fry hole on Twitter. That's probably what you want to go find. So,
all right, JD Young, always a pleasure to have you back on the show.
All right, thanks, Gil.
All right, it's the new year, and that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you'll want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or waxy or taste like a chemical spill. You want to eat healthy, but it just gets so boring. By like week three, you might be thinking, this is just not worth it. Where's the chocolate? Well, Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, and most Built Bars contain just 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. And there's so many flavors to choose from coconut almond, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, that's my favorite, mint brownie, and many more. In fact, Built is always coming out with new limited time flavors, so check out Built.com often to see what's new. Go to Built.com right now, use the promo code LOCK15. You'll get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, everybody, and thank you for joining us here for the Monday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast. Gil Martin, glad to be with you, and thank you for making Locked On NHL your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. Always a pleasure to welcome back a very familiar face to the Monday version of the Locked On NHL podcast, Sarah Avampato, now of course, of Locked On LA Kings. And Sarah, great to have you here again.
Always glad to be here. I wish it would be under like really fun circumstances sometimes, though. Yeah,
well, we'll work on that. We'll get there. We'll get there. I mean, these aren't bad circumstances, I hope. I mean, okay.
Let's
talk about it. The LA Kings adding Mark Bergevin to their front office. Kind of an interesting situation because he is a senior advisor to GM Rob Blake. So let's start with this. What exactly does that mean?
Who knows? That's the question. This isn't the first time the Kings have done something like this. I think Ron Hextall was a senior advisor consultant a couple years ago. They have a long history of kind of bringing on guys like this. And it, you know, initially when this came out, it sort of felt like a, gonna do my buddy a solid, give him a job for a little bit and, you know, pay him so he can give me an opinion every so often. I think that especially Rob Blake, I mean, he's far enough into his tenure as GM that he doesn't necessarily need, you know, someone else hanging around, but especially earlier in his career, it did make sense to have a sort of, you know, experienced GM who was just sort of in between jobs, hanging out to bounce ideas off of him. And I feel like that is kind of what this is as well. But maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, should Rob Blake be looking over his shoulder, I guess, really becomes the big question.
Yeah, that's sort of the big question mark hanging over all of this. Rob Blake, I think this is the last year of his deal. He has talked about, you know, he has every intention of re-signing. The organization has given no indication that things might be troubled. The Kings are a rebuilding team and everyone knows that. So this isn't a, you know, playoffs or bust kind of thing. But there are now rumors that at the kind of end of the season that Bergevin may be signing a deal to officially become the assistant general manager of the team, which that, you know, that puts the little, you know, face in the rearview mirror for Rob Blake, because why else do you have Mark Bergevin sitting around as your assistant if right. you aren't preparing to maybe elevate him in the future?
Your thoughts about Bergevin, what he brings to the table, what concerns you about him coming into the organization?
I mean, his track record speaks for itself in both the positive and the negative. He is generally regarded as a guy who is pretty good in terms of making trades. You don't often hear about, you know, especially when he was with Montreal, like he didn't exactly, you know, make huge moves, but he was, you know, he fleeced enough teams as Montreal's GM that you're like, okay, like you can always use someone else to kind of help you concoct a trade. But drafting, horrible. If he is involved in drafting in any way, I'm going to be very concerned. The Kings have been fantastic at drafting over the past, you know, many years now. And I would hope that he stays far away from that. Like, that's not even going into the whole Logan Mailloux situation of Bergevin being like, yeah, that was fine with me. Just in general, the Canadians haven't drafted particularly well outside of like Cole Caulfield, probably. So that is concerning. And, you know, just in general, his involvement in more than his fair share of NHL scandals does give you cause for concern of has he learned any lesson out of any of this? He has been unemployed for 40 something days, I saw online. Right. What has he learned either from any of his involvement in any of the bad things that have gone down, and what has he learned in terms of what is going to make him a better leader, a better GM in the future? And I don't really think that there's an answer to that. So it is concerning. I mean, I wasn't concerned until I started seeing the reports saying, oh, he's actually going to sign a contract to be the assistant GM. Then I was like, oh, great. So he actually is going to have input. I don't know that I like this.
Yeah. That does sort of change the tone of that kind of mm-hmm. assigning and the hiring. As far as the Kings are concerned right now on the ice, fighting for a playoff berth in the mm-hmm. thick of things, nice shutout win over the weekend. And well, let's start with this, because I think I have to ask this to every host. Who's out with COVID and who's healthy? I mean, how bad is it on the Kings roster right now?
They actually have been fairly lucky, knock on wood. They have had just a few guys out at a time. You know, it's never been more than two or three guys out. I think the latest additions to the COVID list were both Alex Iafallo and Alex Turcotte. And both of those guys are, I think Turcotte just got taken off the list, and I'm pretty sure that Iafallo is as well. So I think they may not actually have anyone on the COVID list after, you know, the next couple of days. So they have been very lucky. And the silver lining is that it has given some of the younger players the chance to step up. Alex Turcotte, until he got COVID, was getting his feet wet in the NHL. It opened a spot for Martin Ferk, who has been down toiling in the AHL, but is back up with his very, very heavy shot and already scoring. So fortunately, injuries aren't too bad, and COVID has so far not been as huge of an impact as for other teams. I think the only games that they've had rescheduled have been because of things impacting the other team. I think that a couple games up in Canada they were supposed to do that they have not been able to get done yet.
Talk to me a little bit about Jonathan Quick. It's almost like he's gone into a time machine and has really gone back to the way he played a few years ago as compared to the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it has been, if you asked me at the beginning of the season, you know, what would my surprise storyline have been? It definitely would not have been this. You know, Quick, we all kind of saw as a guy who's on, you know, the downswing of his career. Numbers just kept getting worse year after year. And you're like, okay, well, you know, he's still around. He's a great backup kind of guy, good veteran mentorship. And then this year he came back looking like, you know, 2012, 2014 Jonathan Quick. And it's been good because Cal Peterson, who was supposed to be kind of inching towards becoming the starter, has struggled. So I was really glad to see him get that shutout in against Detroit, because, you know, he gets a little confidence back. He made some good saves. So hopefully we get him rolling too. But yeah, Jonathan Quick has looked phenomenal. He has been a big reason why this team is currently, at least last time I looked at the standings, in a wild card position. So it's very unexpected, but, you know, I'm not going to complain about it.
How, I mean, who are some of the surprising players offensively who have helped this team get to where they are right now?
One big surprise for me has been Adrian Kempe. He's still very young. A Swedish forward who, you know, has been sort of the like bane of Kings fans' existence at times because, you know, he's a first round draft pick. I think he was pick number 30 or 31. So, you know, basically a high second round pick essentially. But, you know, of course that comes with the pedigree of, well, you're a first round pick. You should be amazing. And he has just been very streaky as a scorer. He'll have, you know, three or four games where he's scoring all the time and then go for 20 games without a point kind of player. And then this year he has been playing on the top line. He currently leads the team in goals, which is very unusual. Usually it's Kopitar leading the team. But I think it's a contract year for him. So you're like, this kid's going to get paid. So we'll see how that works out. But it has been a refreshing change of pace to see him actually consistently chipping in on offense and just, you know, making smart plays all around, and has been a big driver of, you know, putting the puck in the net, which is something the Kings can always use someone to do.
No doubt about that. Sarah, why don't you tell our listeners and our viewers where they can find the show and where they could find you on social media?
Sure. So Locked On Kings, of course, available wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me on Wednesdays here on Locked On NHL, talking all about the Western Conference with Jess Mamosto from Locked On Flames. So we'll be checking in on what's going on there. And some week we'll be able to stop talking about COVID and actually talk about hockey. Locked On Kings is on Twitter at Locked On LA Kings. And I am also on Twitter at Right Said Sarah, W-R-I-T-E, Said Sarah with an H, mostly yelling about sports.
All right, Sarah Avampato, always a pleasure to have you back here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Today's episode is also brought to you by your friends at BetOnline. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. It's a new year, and we have a new updated desktop and mobile website, so sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. That's Locked On, one word, and betonline.ag will give you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit because you listen to the Locked On NHL podcast. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, right now it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show the host of Locked On Florida Panthers, Armando Velez. Armando, great to have you back.
It's great to be back, Gil. Last time I was on the show, I was talking about a recent losing streak that the Panthers were going on, but great to be back here under better circumstances with this hockey team in a small town called Sunrise, Florida.
Yeah, and this team now in first place in the Atlantic Division. And how long has it been since they lost? I mean, it's been a while.
Their last loss came in their last game before the COVID shutdown. Against the Los Angeles Kings, where they had seven players on the COVID list, had to dress 16 skaters, and then they got shut down after that. But ever since coming back, they've had a mostly healthy lineup. And that's one thing that the Florida Panthers have been very fortunate with. They've had some COVID luck. A lot of their players came back, and only like three or four players are now on the COVID list. So they're close to returning. The broadcast yesterday said that Sam Reinhart should be practicing this week, so he's going to come back. And that's the thing. They've been, some of their top six players have been out. Sam Reinhart's on the COVID list. Sam Bennett got suspended. He just served his final game of his three-game suspension for a hit on Cedric Paquette on New Year's Day against the Montreal Canadiens. So he just finished his most recent suspension for a repeat offender. But also, the fact that the Florida Panthers, they've been mediocre on the road for most of this season. They entering this road trip, going into Dallas and then going into Carolina, they were 4-4-4. That was one thing that was talked about in Florida Panther circles, and they got 3 out of 4 in this most recent road trip. So, and the Carolina game, a big overtime winner by Anthony Duclair, who's found a home in South Florida. Great story for Anthony Duclair. And now they're over 500 on the road. Now they're leading the division in points percentage, and they have games in hand on the Tampa Bay Lightning as well. And they're still behind in points percentage against the Carolina Hurricanes. But this Florida Panthers team, they've won the season series against Carolina, the Washington Capitals, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they still have one more matchup against Tampa Bay and one more matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes. And they already won the season series. So this is a great stepping stone for this Florida Panthers team to possibly take that next step. They're going to make the playoffs, but what their quest is to get out, not be in that 2-3 in the division, because the 2-3 in the Atlantic are going to be either Toronto or one of the Florida teams, more than likely. And I mean, maybe Toronto can create on a run too. The Florida Panthers haven't faced them yet. But the priority for the Florida Panthers is just to get that win the division for this season. And right now they're very well on track.
You mentioned Anthony Duclair, and you know he's had his issues at some of his other stops across the league. What is it about this team that has made it such a good fit for him, and what is he doing better and differently?
He's finishing on a lot of his breakaways as well, and he's using that speed to create opportunities for other people. And the best thing of it all right now is that he has a teammate who sets him up beautifully in Jonathan Huberdeau. And Jonathan Huberdeau, right now he's fourth in the NHL in points behind the two superstars in Edmonton and Alex Ovechkin. So right now he's fourth in the NHL. And I got to think that with the Edmonton Oilers, they've been on a little bit of a downward trajectory lately. If they don't make the playoffs, that helps Jonathan Huberdeau's case to get some more Hart Trophy votes, because there's a point in time where Alexander Barkov was out, and even Anthony Duclair was out too for multiple weeks. But Anthony Duclair was just never placed on IR. There was just a few setbacks here and there from his recovery. But Jonathan Huberdeau, without Barkov, without Anthony Duclair a lot of the time this season, Jonathan Huberdeau has shown up this season. He has 45 points in 34 games for the Florida Panthers, and it's just incredible what he's doing. And Anthony Duclair and Barkov, who are two players who are leading the team in goals still, there was a stretch of time where they weren't even playing, and that's when the Florida Panthers started going on a little bit of a losing streak. And then you insert those guys back. The COVID shutdown for the Florida Panthers got those people who were not on the COVID list healthier. And the moment that they got back, the Florida Panthers played hockey again, those players were all activated all at the same time. So the shutdown was good for COVID reasons and non-COVID reasons for the Florida Panthers.
One thing that hasn't been as consistent, you know, Florida right now, first in the league in goals scored, 20th in the league on the power play. What has to improve on the power play? Why are they struggling? You would think with all that offensive talent, the power play would be near the top of the league.
Mm-hmm. Season averages for the Florida Panthers would have them at near the low teens right now. But they didn't score a power play goal on Saturday against the Carolina Hurricanes, but before that, there was a stretch of games where they had 5 power play goals in 4 games. So that was an improved area, and a lot of that had to do with the unit that they had on and the players that came back from injury. And it's not fixed by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a lot better than what it was when Barkov was out as well. And they were trying to figure out who was going to be that new quarterback on the power play as well, because I also consider this, with Coach Q resigning, Andrew Burnett was the guy running the power play for the Florida Panthers. Now he's wearing multiple hats on this team. So that might be a little bit of a mix up of why the power play has been a little not so encouraging for this Florida Panthers team. That might factor in a little bit, but not completely. But also that. But the Florida Panthers' recent stretch of power plays gives me a little bit of encouragement for this team going forward. And I also want to mention the penalty kill as well for this Florida Panthers team. Jonathan Huberdeau, before this season, he didn't really play much on the penalty kill, and now he's playing more often on the kill. And the top unit for forwards in that department is a rookie in Anton Lindell, 20 years old. And he has been he roomed with Barkov before the season started. Anton Lindell eventually found his own place. But he was on that top unit. He's leading the team in defensive zone starts too as a rookie. And that is when you need a face-off win at the end of the game, you're trusting a rookie to put you in that situation to defend well. And he has that coming from his experience in HIFK and Liga that has really prepared him for the NHL. He's not going to win the Calder Trophy this year because he got off to a little bit of a slowish start, but the way that he's developed, he knows that he's not where he wants to be, but he talked about how he wants to raise his floor consistently, and his floor is very high.
All right. Give me one player, unsung, who, you know, casual hockey fans or fans who don't follow your team every day, but he's been contributing a lot to the success of this team behind the scenes.
I'm going to say Patrick Hornquist. That is, we know that he's not the player that he used to be from his time in Pittsburgh, but the leadership that Patrick Hornquist brings on this Florida Panthers roster, and lately before he was placed on the COVID list on Saturday, he was on a stretch where he had 4 points in four games. That fourth line, an honorary mention of that fourth line for the Florida Panthers, Etu Lustarinen, Ryan Lomberg, and Patrick Hornquist, their recent homestand, their four-game homestand, they had four goals, five assists, and a +7 rating all in that stretch. And Patrick Hornquist had a lot to do with that. And he's known to be placed in his office, like right on the doorstep of deflecting pucks in. That's what he's known for. And usually in late game situations, when the Florida Panthers are down and they call a timeout, you see Patrick Hornquist there in late game situations because of the experience factor there. And he's been just an incredible leader, mentoring two young players in Ryan Lomberg, who scored against his former team, the Calgary Flames, just a few nights ago, and Etu Lustarinen, a guy who has experience playing in the AHL in AHL Charlotte when they were under the Carolina Hurricanes affiliation and they won the Calder Championship. So now we're starting to see what Patrick Hornquist is, his mentorship, what it's starting to mean for these young players as they're trying to keep a consistent spot in this lineup, and they have.
All right, Armando, why don't you tell our listeners and our viewers where they could find the podcast and where they could find you on social media?
They can follow me on Twitter at MondoMan12. They can follow the show account at @LO_FLAPanthers. And with the Florida Panthers now on their recent stretch of six games in a row after this break and the football season ending for the South Florida team here, it's time to pay attention. And I hope that Saturday night's win for the Florida Panthers really put the league on notice about this team.
It definitely should. Armando Vela, is always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Gil.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On NHL podcast. I want to thank my guests, Armando Velez of Locked On Florida Panthers, J.D. Young, the co-host of Locked On Sharks, and Sarah Avampato of Locked On LA Kings, bringing us the best stories from around the league. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe, and thanks for listening to the Locked On NHL podcast.